in your face. James, welcome to 3CR.
Thanks so much for having me.
What really struck me about Outlaws was the erasure of queer culture as a result of colonization and how folks in those countries are still dealing with the damage.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It's a historical injustice of epic proportions, really. So many people don't understand that queer people have existed throughout history in every part of the planet. And unfortunately, the impact of colonialism was to attempt to erase difference, to erase people whose gender expression or whose sexual orientation was outside of the norm. And our film really is working towards, hopefully, you know, tackling that injustice.
What really also struck me was that there are approximately 60 countries globally where homosexuality is still criminalized.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think a lot of people don't know that. And actually, it's 65 at the moment. And last year was the first year in decades in which that number went up. So what we're seeing is an attack on LGBT rights all over the world. I think we've had so much progress, largely due to the incredible individuals that are featured in Outlaws who litigate, who take their countries to court and take on these huge amount of risk by taking these cases. And yeah, we've seen so much progress, but we are definitely under attack from a lot of different people and organizations who want to control us and tell us how we should and shouldn't live our lives.
It's really frightening that number has gone up in recent years. What is driving that?
Well, there's a whole host of bad actors at play in the world at the moment, largely driven by Christian nationalists in the US. But also we're seeing a lot of money pouring into the anti-rights movement from Russia. And it seems to be that a lot of these groups, these organizations, they have differing needs, differing views, but they have been able to coalesce around this one issue as a way to scapegoat a significant minority in our societies to either to distract from their own failings as political and religious leaders, or to further some sort of moral crusade, which in no way reflects the reality of people's lives.
And that's a theme, isn't it, that Outlaws really conveys, that governments and rulers have been doing that really since the era of Henry VIII.
Exactly, yeah. When I found out that Henry VIII was really the architect of these criminalizing laws, so the Buggery Act in 1533 was the first time a state had criminalized same-sex intimacy. That's consenting adult intimacy in private. And yeah, it's a really interesting topic. I mean, obviously it's horrifying, but what we try to do in the film is weave a line through history from Henry VIII all the way up to today to say that this is nothing new. This has been happening for a really long time. And we really, really need people to wake up to the fact that we are being constantly manipulated into hating certain groups of people in the way that really benefits the rich and powerful, but does nothing to create safer societies.
You are the writer, are the producer and the co-director of Outlaws. You focus on three countries and three individuals in particular, a gentleman from Namibia, someone from Sri Lanka and a trans woman from Barbados. How did you find them?
So we've been working, I run a company called The Good Side, and we help organizations understand culture, understand social issues and use storytelling to hopefully affect change. And we've been working with an incredible organization called the Human Dignity Trust, who support these individuals as they take their cases to court to challenge criminalization. And they work with grassroots organizations only where they're wanted. So it's a real collaboration with people on the ground who are facing these risks every day. So we already had a really great connection with the movement and the individuals. I didn't know Raven or Friedel that well before we made the film, but I did know Rosanna. And in making the film, we really shine a light on the incredible work that they've done, but also really like celebrate who they are as people to show that, you know, queer people, unfortunately, a lot of people don't seem to understand this. It's just, we're just like everybody else. We're just as human as everybody else. And the film is a testament to them, and it's a love letter to the work that they do and the movement in general.
What really jumped out was that in parts of Africa, for example, there were really rich queer cultures where queer cultures were celebrated. And that has been totally, totally erased. Tell us some of the gems that you uncovered about the erased queer history of countries that were colonized.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's also devastating what happened, but it's a wonderful, beautiful thing to be able to re-archive these histories and to present them to audiences who don't know about them. And well, actually, we've been on the festival circuit at the moment, and we've just come from Canada, where it was Two-Spirit people were a part of Indigenous communities, were really targeted by the church, by schooling systems to be erased, really. And now I'm in Mexico for another festival, and we have loads of different interesting communities like the Muche, who are gender non-conforming, I guess is one way you could put it. The language is obviously always really different from in different places. And we talk about the Agogye, who are in Dahomey in Africa, who were understood to be lesbians. So what we try to do is really celebrate these amazing expressions, these lost histories, really, and shine a light on the fact that for pre-colonialism, there were these communities, and it's actually criminalization that was the import, not homosexuality, which is what a lot of people believe in criminalizing countries.
What was the thing that horrified you the most in your research?
Oh, that's a good question. There is so much to be horrified by. I think really when you piece together the impact of colonialism on queer people, it's a really expansive topic, and it's impossible to think about it as just a queer topic. We talk about it in the film from that perspective, but we want it to be included in how people talk about the devastating effects of colonialism. And really, I think that the way I connected to it and was horrified by it is by my own upbringing, really. You know, it's important to bring your own lens and experience to these things. And having grown up in a very homophobic society myself in 80s and 90s Britain, but I wasn't even criminalized. I think that when you look at the impact and the continuing impact to today, actually the real horrors live in what is happening in countries that are doubling down on these laws and making new laws that not just criminalizing acts, but are criminalizing entities. So unfortunately, the biggest horrors are happening right now.
And as a person who's from the UK, you must kind of be horrified when you're doing this research and interviewing people in countries like Namibia, like Barbados, like Sri Lanka, who have had these incredible journeys of fighting criminalisation, that what you have in the UK is things coming full circle and trans people being oppressed and laws being passed to oppress trans folks in the UK. That must be horrifying for you and for the community in the UK to kind of, you know, sense that things are coming full circle, that, you know, the impacts of colonialism are happening in your own country, that culture still exists.
Yeah, it's such a good point, because I think there is a tendency for Western countries to sort of pat themselves on the back and say, aren't we brilliant and progressive, and look at those barbaric countries with criminalization and homophobia, really replicating or continuing these colonial narratives that are completely nonsense. And without any kind of regard for the fact that we exported these laws to lots of countries in the world, the majority of the countries that criminalize. And like you say, in the UK, we have such a vicious attack on trans people at the moment. It's really horrifying to see. And our government seems to not be really approaching these issues that we face in these kind of like societies that are built around this binary. We should be approaching them with kindness and with curiosity and understanding. How can we make people's lives easier and better? And how can we keep everybody safe? That isn't what's happening here. And it's really important to remember that these problems, homophobia, transphobia, they exist everywhere, and they need to be fought in your own backyard and as part of a global community.
The community in the UK, the trans community and gender diverse community in particular, must be absolutely terrified of the prospect of a Nigel Farage-led government and the subsequent oppression that would follow from that.
Absolutely, yeah. The effects of the the rhetoric that is coming from the far right is felt every day by trans and non-binary people walking down the street. You know, where can they go to toilet? Trans people are literally wetting themselves in public because they are unable to use a public toilet. This is outrageous. This is just should not be happening in today's society or any society ever. We have to be thinking about ways in which we can make life better for people, because in society, everybody should be included. Society, how we live, all of the services that are provided by our taxes, by our government, they're for everybody. And at the moment, it seems to be that there is a really strong, vicious attack on a significant minority of people, not even a significant minority when we talk about trans and non-binary people. And it's so disgusting. It's absolutely horrifying to me that we would be picking on this small group of people in this way.
To what extent are countries like Russia feeding people's social media feeds in the UK to kind of, you know, exasperate this sense of transphobia?
Yeah, well, I know. Well, I'm not sure if I know the full details or the impact of the in any kind of like specific way, but I do know that the amount of money that is being spent in Russia, in all over the world by Russia, is enormous. We are being massively overspent and overspoken and pushed aside by this massive amount of noise that is happening online. The only thing I can think is that we have to get offline. We have to find ways to connect as communities, reach out to people, and heal these rifts that are being created online by moving offline.
You mentioned that, you know, Christian evangelicalism, if you like, was fueling the resurgence of kind of, you know, colonial missionaries going into countries in Africa, for example, and kind of, you know, stirring up queer phobia. And I guess with the cessation of US aid and the election of Donald Trump, it's only getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, before the Christian nationalist evangelical movement has been going on since the 90s and is really a response to the progressive movements in the West, which have been so successful. A lot of those people, they decided, well, we'll go and embed this negative retroactive thinking in African countries, in criminalizing countries in South Asia, Southeast Asia, the Caribbean, across the world, really. And unfortunately, they had a lot of success. But what was happening was there was a huge amount of investment in terms of aid into the movement around the world that was going some way to pushing back against that narrative. But now the Christian nationalists are in charge. They are in government. They are in the White House. So what we've seen is since the USA cuts is we have the push back against LGBTQIA plus rights coming from the Christian nationalists and a massive cut in aid, which means that a lot of the organizations and people who were surviving, who were able to mount their campaigns and do advocacy, they are now, they've run out of money. They're disappearing and people are really, really suffering everywhere. So it's a really, really dire time for the global community.
One of the countries, of course, that Outlaws focuses on is Sri Lanka and the criminalization in Sri Lanka. How close are we to decriminalization in Sri Lanka? Is it still a long way away?
It's such a good question because it's a really interesting situation in Sri Lanka because there's a funky court clause in their constitution, which means that you can't take them to court like a lot of the other people do. You can't litigate against the government, against colonial laws. So the change will have to happen through the legislature. Now, there has been a private members bill put forward. The governing party in Sri Lanka had it in their manifesto, their English language manifesto only, interestingly, to say that they would decriminalize. And the United Nations, from a case that was brought by Rosanna, who's in the film, has also told Sri Lanka that they need to decriminalize. There really is no reason why they haven't decriminalized that is in terms of policy or mechanisms. All of those boxes have been ticked, really, but it's massively stalled. Our theory is that the government doesn't really know how to sell it to the communities, to the public. They get a lot of backlash. Again, a lot of money is flowing into countries like Sri Lanka from the anti-rights movement. So any kind of advocacy or progressive talk online, chatter online, gets a massive backlash. So I think they're frightened. They're worried about losing power. And that's something we see all over the world, is that politicians see decriminalization as politically expensive. So unfortunately, there's no movement in Sri Lanka, and it's it's baffling as to why, if you think about it from these kind of like checkbox policy point of view.
And with over, you know, a century of criminalizations, one thing that your documentary Outlaws really conveyed was that countries have completely forgotten their queer history, completely forgotten their queer culture, and assume that the British colonial criminalization of homosexuality was something that's always been embedded in their culture, where in actual fact it hasn't.
Yeah, that's the flip. That's exactly what we really hope to achieve with the film, is to shine a light on that topsy-turvy situation we have, in which countries don't understand that there is queerness throughout history. And a lot of leaders will talk about how homosexuality is the white man's disease, for example. But of course, what we're saying in this film, and is backed up by historical fact, is that criminalization came with the white man. It was not homosexuality. So really, that's what we desperately want people to understand, to just sort of tackle that mindset shift.
James, you're currently in Mexico. What's your reading of the political situation over there at the moment, particularly with an aggressive neighbour such as the United States?
Yeah, well, my understanding is that in Mexico they have a very progressive government in power at the moment that is much better at reaching out to minority groups and making these connections that really try and move to a more united space and overcome division. I suspect from what I speak to and when I speak to Mexicans is that they're looking over the border and thinking, what the hell is going on? And having just come from Canada as well, where they've just recently elected Mark Carney, it's like the repercussions of Trump getting into power seem to be largely unpredictable to me. When I think about the UK, we have the rise of Reform and the far right there. You would think that British people would be looking at America and think, no, thank you, we don't want any of that. That remains to be seen, unfortunately.
Well, James Lewis, your documentary Outlaws will be showing at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. And of course, you're taking it around the world to festivals. It's a wonderful documentary. Thank you so much for joining us today on 3CR.
Thank you so much. Thanks for engaging so much and the great questions. Really appreciate it.
3CR.
In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ plus communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.